Yeah. Okay. So, Eco-Judaism 101 on the why and how to care for creation. The categories themselves are also helpful. Even if you don't focus on the texts, you can imagine what some of the texts are. But the Bereshit story always comes in for criticism, but also has incredible potential. You'll see that reflected elsewhere. This question of ownership of the land. And then Baal Tashrit, which is sometimes too easy. We jump right there and think that, oh, the you know, therefore, ecology is 1/613th of Judaism, right? Because one of the mitzvot, number 530, is like, you know, the green mitzvah. When in fact, and I heard this ironically from someone who lives four blocks from me, but I had to come to Manhattan for it. Was anyone at the People's Climate March right before? It's amazing. Even though I hadn't finished my sermons yet, I had to go. So, and at the end, at St. John the Divine, there was a kind of leaders gathering. Al Gore was there and all these people, including Reverend Jim Wallace from Sojourners. He's kind of the Michael Lerner meets David Saperstein meets Arthur Waskow of the evangelical world, if that helps. Anyway, amazing guy, runs this national progressive evangelical caucus, and his kids went to the same school as mine. So, like, we're the clergy parents of John Eaton Elementary School in D.C. are me and Jim Wallace. Anyway, he said, this is, using beautiful, accessible New Testament imagery, what we don't need anymore is saying environment is one of a bunch of issues, and we need to raise it from number 20 to number 18 to number 14, you know, to move it higher up the priorities. What is needed is the awareness that unless we work on this with the alacrity that the scientific consensus says we must, none of our other issues matter. What is needed in religious language is conversion. We have not yet seen and embraced the truth, and we must see and embrace the truth, and the truth will set us free. Right? And, you know, even though he is channeling New Testament, we can translate that. We can work with that. You know, that for all the amazingness of the Religious Action Center and the fact that the RAC has done so much on this issue, and David in his recent years was really seen, he was side by side with Jim Wallace and a couple of others, always on Capitol Hill on environmental stuff. It really became one of the top RAC issues in recent years. I'm grateful for that. But the very model of the RAC, right? There's five LAs and each of them have 12 issues, and one of them is called environment. And even if we pour more resources, even if we make a dedicated legislative assistant position for it, there's something about that model that resists the conversion that Jim Wallace was suggesting. So that was a digression from the idea of Baal Tashrit being the core of it, right? It's not just that we need to move Baal Tashrit up the chain and make it one of the top 10 mitzvot, not just one of the top 613, but... there's this beautiful, at the very bottom, from Shimshon Raphael Hirsch, the 19th century German Orthodox, kind of founder of modern Orthodoxy, although some say founder of Haredi. Anyway, that do not destroy anything. Lo Tashrit is the first and most general call of God. So you've got this Orthodox 19th century leading, you know, Paskin here, saying... The first thing, it's not Pru Urvu, it's not Nivra B'Tzelem Elohim, it's not Ve'ahavta Et Adonai Elohecha, it's not all the things that you would think an Orthodox rabbi would say is the first and most general call of God. It start from not wasting. If we started from there, how different would this roof look? How different would our lives look?
So, moral dilemma. Board member or a donor wants to give the College Institute a gift of stock from an oil company. Do we accept that?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if we're really talking about dramatic change, I mean, this is an issue that we have to confront. I mean, it's true. All of our institutions are so intertwined with fossil fuel businesses that are either run by or are run from fossil fuels. I mean, how do we deal with that?
And it's one thing to look at Jewish mega donors who made their money from oil, and who shall remain nameless except when we name them. But we deal with this all the time.
Right.
I live in D.C. I came here to teach Eco-Torah. I didn't drive, but my Amtrak ticket made their running this train a little more profitable. That increases the likelihood that they'll run another crazy middle-of-the-night route between D.C. and New York for crazies like us. It takes a lot of electricity off of the grid, powered by coal, to move one of those trains. So I can feel virtuous I did public transit. I can say that the end justifies the means, right? And actually, the proof is in the pudding. If you all walk away, you know, converted and make this a bigger part of your own rabbinates, then, you know, it was worth it. If it was just, oh, that was some good Torah, you know, what's next? Then, you know, no, it wasn't worth the carbon footprint of my 500-mile round trip, right? So the point is, we all deal with those questions on a regular basis, and you're right to ask that. There's something that I wanted to say that I'm going to put it here, even though it doesn't belong. So much of Judaism matches kind of Western thought with philosophy because it's hair splitting about what's the right thing to do. And a lot of environmental stuff comes down to the complicated life cycle analysis, you know, paper versus plastic, right? Train versus bus, right? And you know, us enviro geeks, we geek out on that the same way you can geek out on a sugya of Talmud and get really into the hair splitting. The orientation that I think we need in 21st century Jewish environmentalism is not Talmud anymore. It's Musar. What we need is to appropriate the amazing disciplines of our tradition that teach discipline, that teach, we already know more or less what's the right thing to do. Now let's figure out why we don't do it. How is it that we know that our consumerism is part of destroying the planet for our own great-grandchildren, much less it violates every value of justice and sustainability that we hold, and we hold them, but how deeply do we hold them? How much are we willing to cut back on the thermostat for our own comfort? How much are we willing to give up those things that we love because we're still part of an acquisitive society when there are people around the globe who could use them, and when doing so would mean that more things didn't have to be produced at a higher carbon footprint, right? You know, thrift stores are part of Shemitah values, but they're also part of the future. But that also means that the average upper middle class number of sweaters and shirts and whatever in our closets, I'm as guilty as anyone, all that needs to be rethought. And that's Musar more than Talmud. That's how do we get ourselves to finally do the right thing, not gradations of what is the right thing.
Can you, I heard in your comment to Dr. Grant, in the implicit sort of thinking of how do I make decisions on the margin based on a utilitarian system or a values-based absolutist system. And can you explain like a little more how you think about that decision-making? And also, like, I hear incrementalism a lot when it comes to green decision-making, mm-hmm. when it comes to like how do we change our power supply? How do we make a difference in our homes? Like, it's the low-hanging fruit can frequently be like the next good step to making things better rather than trying to moralize and making everything revolutionary. So like, where are your thoughts around those issues?
For next Sukkot. I mean, those are such good questions. Incrementalism versus the conversion model. If we get people to do something that is much better, will that then be the new plateau, even though it's not quite sustainable? Right? Like, once I've screwed in a compact fluorescent bulb in place of my incandescent, do I now no longer need to worry about turning it off when I leave the room? Right, which then gets into, you know, there's the Bubba Misa that it takes so much electricity to start one up that you should leave it on when you leave, but that's not true. The latest ones, based on the ballast, it's worth turning off even if you're gone for 30 seconds. But there's these mices out there, right? So, I mean, those are the right kinds of questions. And what is needed is a thorough commitment to this and not just, I'm going to figure out the next thing. That's why, coming back to, it's, you know, it ain't easy being green and it's tough to be a Jew in parallel with each other.
Yeah. Wondering about, part of our job is to share these types of messages and act as gatekeepers. It seems to me that a lot of the people we have access to, youth and adults and congregants and future congregants, are past the point where this is an introduction. This is kind of out there in the zeitgeist, and they get this, and they don't use plastic bags anymore. And we're not teaching them about shotness. This is something that they at least know about, but that there's a certain level of complacency. Because, okay, they bought a CFL, and they're using fabric bags now. And then, kind of like, that's enough, and that's where they're at. And if you are thinking about how to move out of that kind of good enough level and push people a little bit higher.
Amen. There's no easy prescription for it. And blessedly, we're not where we were 15, 20 years ago, when it was all about, did you know there's a law called Baal Tashchit? Did you know that Judaism says not wasting is important? But now, it's that uncomfortable conversation, and we have this in the pews all the time. You know, not so much. As Danny knows, our parking lot is, like, full of pre-ote. That's the proper plural, right? We're the green shul for Western Montgomery County. But nonetheless, there are people who pull up in an SUV, or at least in something that is not nearly the most efficient in its class. But they're coming to talk about their dying mother. So the classic, I mean, you know, now really, you know, I'm in my comfort zone. I'm a pulpit rabbi who just thinks about this stuff a lot on the side. But, you know, it's that old line of comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable. And, by the way, do people know the actual etiology of that? I did a little research. It was Peter Finley Dunn, who was a newspaper reporter in the 1890s, and he said that this is the journalist's job, is to comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable. People have attributed it to Heschel and others. It sounds Heschelian, but it was actually 1890s American journalism. Now you know. But it is such a good line to say what it is that we're called to do. And I hope that those who are going on in chaplaincy and in Hillel and in administrative and all those, right, it's still that same dance. And so there's a time for me to talk about why are we not making the right choice the next time we buy a car, and there's a time to ignore what they just drove up in and the fact that they're killing their own and my great-grandchildren because we have to talk about someone now on life support. And, you know, that's the dance. There's no easy way to do it, but we're in it together. And those are the kinds of conversations we need each other for. That's the importance of a peer group. That's the importance of you know, good friends and classmates, but also that's what, you know, if you max out on it, that's what a CCAR conference can be, or a CLAW thing where we get together across the boundaries, because we're all in this together, and, you know, we need each other for figuring out how to navigate these shoals. Good question. Okay, so that was Baal Tashchit. I just want to make sure you know what's here. Shabbat sabbatical, again, Shemitah is awesome, and there's so much to be said about it, so I'm not going to. But you have people in town like Nigel Savage of Chazon who helped to get this Shemitah year consciousness going. Yigal Deutscher, who's back and forth between Israel and the States, who wrote this absolutely beautiful, it's called 7seeds.org, the number 7 seeds. You can download his gorgeous 64-page book called Envisioning Sabbatical Culture. I've used all my Rosh Hashanah readings from the pulpit were Yigal Deutscher this year, because it's just, he writes poetry about Shemitah. Anyway, good stuff.
Sorry, can you say that again?
The number 7 seeds.org. And it's also at hazon.org/Shemitah Project or something like that. You can link to the Seven Seeds stuff. Yigal Deutscher was part hired by Chazon and part independent, kind of getting the Shemitah stuff going in the last year or two. So, you know, here's some older stuff. And then this key question, which most of my other texts focus on because it felt so Sukkot-ish, is our humble place within creation. And here's all these great midrashim and resources that just remind us that we are not the telos. We are not the apex. We are not the purpose. And lots of people say that in lots of different ways, and I put some extras on the first handout that went around, along with some Sukkot and Shemitah stuff at the bottom of page 2. We don't have time to look at them together, but they're great resources. And then resources. The bottom here, page 2 of this Eco-Judaism 101, is maybe the most important, because it says go to coejl.org, go to confeinisharim.org, the Orthodox, but not only Orthodox, study sheets. They have green Devar Torah for every Parsha, for every Chag. Amazing resources. Jewcology.org is the new portal to that's kind of uniting everyone, you know, crowdsourcing Jewish environmentalism. Chazon.org and its amazing resources, a lot of which are unfolding just a couple miles away on the Upper West Side or elsewhere. So amazing resources, get to know them, because there's a world out there, and as Jewish leaders, we are part of that.
The 7 one again, sorry.
Sevenseeds.org. Right. So this is one way to structure it. This is, here are the texts, here are the categories, and here are some of the actions that we might take. I didn't focus on them, but, you know, on the right-hand column are just sort of the easy, the 101 stuff. Another way to structure it is really in a values and ethics conversation. So this one, on one side, is Jewish environmental ethics. It's a lot of the same stuff repackaged, you know, more as prose and less as bullet points. A lot of the same text, but going deeper on some of the things like the creation story, emphasizing Tzar Ba'alei Chaim and other laws, emphasizing the Tehillim. It's not only the ones we looked at before, but we quoted Psalm 104, as is done in the morning liturgy traditionally. Ota or Kasalma is recited when wrapping the tefillin. But in the middle of Psalm 104 is this amazing passage that says that the rocks, the rock outcroppings on the mountaintops, are for the hyrax. They're for the coney, the rock badger. Right? The tops of the trees are for the birds. And that idea, it's not for us. The trees are not for us to cut down. The mountaintops are not for us to blow up to get at the seam of coal underneath and pour the rest called tailings into the hollers and destroy West Virginia ecosystem and culture so that we can have New York and Washington electricity, which is what's happening, right? It is Psalm 104, 180-degree reversal. We have this incredible set of values and resources, and just Tehillim is an amazing resource. So is the year cycle. All these sacred cycles, and that's what I had hoped to get to, but we won't. All the stuff about Sukkot and metaphorical eco-theology, again, this is stuff I think about. It's fun, but oh well.
I'm curious if you could recommend other resources, non-Jewish resources.
Non-Jewish? Kind of,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. To educate ourselves about some of the issues, or like, maybe not even the issues, but kind of what are the equivalent, like a Chazon or a Kojel of the not necessarily faith world, but...
Great question. So for, like, ecology 101,
yeah,
right, rather than
yeah.
Jewish environmental.
Right.
So from an advocacy standpoint that then links to some of the key research, 350.org is the main... that's Bill McKibben, who's really, like, the Navi of our time around this stuff. And they're the people behind the People's Climate March, etc. I was actually arrested at the tar sands actions together with James Hansen, the NASA climatologist who's done so much of this research, but you know, he doesn't know me from Adam. We were just next to each other in the paddy wagon. But like, Bill McKibben and 350.org is channeling the best research that's out there on climate and those impacts. That is clearly the overarching issue. Now, we still need to worry about safe drinking water. We still need to worry about lead and particulates in low-income communities, right? We cannot, I mean, climate is an environmental justice issue because it disproportionately affects the poor, but there's environmental justice issues right here in Manhattan and in the Bronx and in Queens, and we need to know about those too. You know, it's easy to get so focused on climate that we miss the fact that environment is also just where we live. And there's a lot of work to be done on local environmental issues as well. So, also RAC.org, right? Just go and see the environmental resources. You know, they link to others. COGIL has external links, etc. All good resources. The last thing I want to leave you with is the importance of knowing your audience. And you can be the judges how well I figured out who you were and what would be useful in our short time together. I'm still working on it. But there's the two main categories. This is where I began with a few of us, of asking sort of what's our comfort level Jewishly and what's our comfort level ecologically. So there are some of us who are in rabbinic or cantorial or education school, but we admit we don't really know the ecology stuff. But a lot of the people that we work with, particularly the objects of our Keruv efforts, right, they're a 9 on eco and a 2 on Judaism, whereas a lot of us may be the reverse. So it's two very different questions. Why be a Jewish environmentalist, which is what we need to bring to the alphabet soup of the American Jewish community to convince them, using the particular and sometimes painfully insular rhetoric and priorities of our community, that this needs to be a priority. And on the second half of the backside of this one, why be a Jewish environmentalist, which is what do we say to the millennials who know that anyone older than them has messed things up for them, and that this is the great work of their time, and what do we need parochial, high bar of entry, all that Hebrew and Aramaic for, right? And if our Keruv, if our outreach and continuity efforts are going to be successful, we need to speak that language. Why be a Jewish environmentalist and not just an environmentalist? So know who you're working with, have these talking points at the ready, and add your own, and if you have a good one, share it with me, because we are in this together.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This was really great. Thank you. I think it's clear just these three handouts could be a whole course. And we actually do have a course coming up this spring on sustainability through our rabbinic department on Judaism and sustainability in rabbinic texts. But we're going to have you back as well. We're going to have you back. We'll figure out the right time and the right way. I just want to say one other thing before people break, and that is we have a green team, Danny, Lisa, Dr. Grant, are there other folks here? Yeah? You're on it. You're on it.
I'm not in.
I'm really interested in, as an institution, where we go from here. We're really very much just at the beginning, and I think collectively we need to figure out what our next steps are. So I want to invite you to continue this conversation.
We should all be on the green team.
Oh,
that's true. But we also need the leadership of people like you, so thank you so much for getting on that 4 o'clock train to be here. And we're very grateful.
Yeah. And a reminder that all of our meeting implements are compostable. So
yes.
Just go down to the floor and
have
to go to
yes.
Sweet.
All right. So nice to meet you or see you again. Thank you.